You will not need much of what I said this morning. This is basically a completely new topic, so it's motivated by what I said this morning, and I will refer to it a little bit in the meantime. But basically, it's a slightly different topic, which is very much related. So I've talked in the morning this formalism about describing an observer and how the observer changes its state, and I will just use this formalism now to explain it a bit better. And maybe some interesting notions related to observers in the context of the Sleeping Beauty problem. So the Sleeping Beauty problem is this funny puzzle where beauty gets either woken once or twice, depending on the toss of a coin, and then has to assign a probability to the coin showing heads. And one can learn quite a few things about that. In the second part, I will use some of the notions that we see in the first part to argue that sometimes when we have an observer and the observer is part of a process and some kind of crazy things happen to your observer, like in the Sleeping Beauty problem, then this can sometimes lead to phenomena that we usually think of specifically quantum. Yeah, we will see in what sense this is true and under what conditions for the second part, and then the third part I will comment a bit on this. We'll see how much time we have. Good. Now the Sleeping Beauty problem is an interesting puzzle that has just come up in the 90s or so, and here's from a paper by Elgar, a description. So here's a description. It says, some researchers are going to put you to sleep. So you, that's the beauty here. During the 2 days that your sleep will last, they will briefly wake you up either once or twice, depending on the toss of a fair coin. So if the coin is heads, you're just woken up once. If the coin is tails, you're woken up twice. After each waking, they will put you back to sleep with a drug that makes you forget that waking. So if it's tails, you woke up, but then you get a drug that you so you forget that you've been waking up and you wake up again. When you are first awakened, to what degree ought you believe that the outcome of the coin toss is heads? So your beauty, you wake up and you have to assign a probability to heads. And you have to think how you would do that. And this is the question that you ask. Dear beauty, please give me probability of heads. And now, what should you do? And Elgar in his paper says the first answer, of course, is that you should, that beauty should say one half, of course.
As you said, when you first wake up, did you mean that?
You don't know, right? You just, yeah, indeed, good point. You wake up, you asked. You don't know if it's the first or second time. Now, the first answer is you should say one half. Well, of course, because initially you were certain that it's a fair coin, so somebody told you that it's a fair coin. And so initially you would have said, well, if it's a fair coin, I've probably one half for heads, one half for tails. And then upon being awakened, writes Elgar, you receive no new information. You knew all along that you would be awakened, so your credence in the coin's landing heads ought to remain one half. Yeah. So it's one way to argue. Seems pretty plausible. But then the second answer is you should say one third, of course, for the following reason. Imagine the experiment repeated many times. Then in the long run, about one third of the awakings would be heads wakings. Yeah, like one third here and two third there. Wakings that happen on trials in which the coin lands heads. So on any particular waking, you should have credence one third that waking is heads waking, and hence have credence one-third in the coins landing heads on that trial. So that's another position that you can take. And then you have people that are thirders and people that are halfers, depending on what point of view they defend. Yeah. And we will know.
So the question is, what's the probability that today's...
Yes. Well, you... Yeah, that's a bit the question. So, I mean, you can think of just, you know, waking up. Somebody has just woken you up and tells you, Lydia, what probability do you assign to the fact that the coin flip originally was heads? And then they have to give an answer. But in fact, you have to be more careful and more specific of what that means for sure. And in any case, we will just see now how this can be analyzed with a bit of formalism. And the formalism is about observers and their states and how they change over time and what the observer knows about the state and so on. So from this morning, I've talked about these histories and measures on histories, and now we have an instance of that. Yeah. So I said, well, the state of an observer is just a binary string. And then we have probability measures on these histories. So history means being in one state, then the next state, then another state. And a probability measure, I gave you an example of a probability measure, which is just 2^-the length or something like this. And a measure is really just something where your total probability is 1. And if you sum off one of the last outcomes, then you get the measure of the early of the earlier part of the history. So what's the measure in this case? So let's look at that setup. What we have to do first is we have to label the observer states by binary strings to use this formalism that I'm suggesting. And that can be arbitrary pretty much. So let's say the initial state of Beauty, which she's told that the experiment is about to start, is just a 0 state. And the state where Beauty wakes up and has just been awoken is like state number 1. But then for her, the state after heads or tails is indistinguishable. It's both the same state. It's also the same state after the amnesia and after she's woken up again. Now, in order to relate this to what I said before, we can have arbitrarily many states, basically formally have to make the history arbitrarily long. So we have to say what happens after the experiment. And we can make this basically in arbitrary ways. Doesn't really matter how we do that. And one possibility to do that would be to say, well, maybe after the experiment next, Beauty gets told what's going on. So maybe here she's going into a state where Beauty hears that scientists tell her that the coin toss was actually heads. Whereas there, she hears scientists tell her that the coin toss was actually tails, and then something else happens, maybe with certain probabilities, to Beauty. Yeah? So that's a possible, these are possible histories of Beauty's state. And now there's a probability distribution on that thing. So what's that distribution? Let me write that on the blackboard, maybe.
Question.
Yeah?
What's the significance of the fact that you've labeled it with 2 zeros and 2 ones? Is that...
Doesn't matter, I can just give it any other label.
Okay.
So the labels really only matter when you make the history very long, so maybe infinitely long, because then you still want to have computability of the history, for example. Yeah. But if it's just a finite number of them, it doesn't really matter. It won't matter for anything that I'm saying, as you will see. But this is a different state from that one, whereas these three states are the same. That's what matters. And in this formalism, you would have to say, well, definitely with probability 1, initially I'm in state 0, or Beauty is in state 0, so the measure of 0 is just 1. And then you have a, and then of course there's a coin toss, but then definitely the next state will be 1. Okay? So definitely the probability to be first in the state 0 and then in the state 1 is also 1. Then, but now the next step is different. So what can happen next is that she's going again to state 1 or she's going to that state. And the probability of both is 1/2. Okay? So probability of 0, 1, 1 is just the probability of 0, 1, 0, 0. And that's 1/2. Yeah. Now, what about this? Well, if she's been woken up twice, then definitely we had tails. And so she definitely gets told that the outcome was tails. So she definitely gets into the state 1/1. So you can also write that the conditional probability of getting into state 1/1 after being in the state 0 and 1 and 1, this is just unit probability. And that would be the probability of the history, first state 0, then state 1, then state 1, then state 1/1, divided by probability of 0, 1, and 1. Yeah. And now this here is 1/2, and then this here must also be 1/2. So the probability of the history 0, 1, 1, 1, 1 is just 1/2. Yeah. So this is a way to work out the measure that describes the situation. Yes?
So I thought the measure was on states which are kind of the memory of the observer. So x1 to xn is kind of memory of the observer. And here, because of the amnesia, surely there's no state of her where there's a 1 followed by a 1.
Yeah, so it's not so much, well, I mean, whatever you have as a memory is somewhat part of the state, that is true. But there's no assumption that there is complete memory of everything. It's really just, the formalism just tells you you have a bunch of states that you go through, whatever that is, and you assign probabilities to the sequence of states. That's
States over time,
yeah, but like subjective, basically, yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter how many seconds this takes, but just you have a succession of states that you go through. That's what you need to have.
It doesn't mean that she has this whole string in her memory at one point.
No. And she doesn't, because she doesn't really remember what has been going on. So this is more from an outside perspective now. We see beauty, and that's what we... what we from the outside can say about her, exactly. So then we have this. We have all these numbers here worked out. And obviously, depending on what's happening next, we can also work out the probabilities of longer histories and so on. And we can, if we want, we can make this infinitely long in a way that even this becomes a computable measure, if we want. So since this is just about a finite sequence, computability is not really a restriction. So that's how what you have, the measure that you would have here. So it's the beauty measure. Beauty's measure. Okay. Now, you can look at a few properties, and some of them are very interesting. You ask, what does beauty know versus what do we know? For example, here's a definition of a certain couple of properties. Maybe I'm not going through all of them, but you would call a measure, for example, Markovian, if whenever your past history has ended in the same state X, same string X, then the future probabilities are the same. So the conditional probabilities only depend on your the final state, the last state, the current state. That would be Markovian. And so here, question is that Markovian here? So, well, getting confused by my own formalism now. Okay, let's first look at another property. Namely, it's acyclic. Being cyclic or acyclic is very interesting. Acyclic means that you cannot have any repetitions. You cannot fully get back to an earlier state. So that means if the same state would appear twice in your history, this history would have to have probability zero. Now, obviously, by construction, that's not the case here. So here, you have the same state repeated twice, and it has not probability zero. So probability of state zero, and then one is not zero. And this means, for example, that the measure is not acyclic. But it allows for these strange amnesia cycles. I made a mistake here. I claim it's also not Markovian. It's not Markovian. And that's easy to see, I guess. So if it was Markovian, then the probability to go to 0, 0 would only depend on the state here. But the probability to go into 0, 0, if you've run through states 0 and then 1, So in this case, where you had hats, you definitely go into state 0, 0. So this is one. But in the other case, if you've gone this path, so you've been woken up twice, so the probability of 0, 0, if you've gone through state 0, 1, 1, this is actually impossible. So when you go down here, you'll not get 0, 0. So this probability is actually zero. And you see that the probability of some next state doesn't only depend on the previous one, and that's why it's not Markovian, easily. Okay. Now, you can look at a couple of properties So here are all the computable measures. Some of them are Markovian, some of them are acyclic. And then there's this property called predictivity, and that's a very interesting property that will have some relations to quantum theory. So what is predictivity? Basically, predictivity means that beauty or whatever observer you have has a uniquely correct way to assign future probabilities given what she knows now. So how is it formalized? Here's a definition. It's still a bit informal, but you can make it more formal with probability theory. But the informal definition is a measure is called predictive if for all states that have non-zero probability to be attained, so that's the state where the observer is in, the measure uniquely induces a notion of conditional probability of the future states given that the current state is X. So what does it mean? Well, here's an interpretation. If you're beauty and you're in state X, then there may in general be more than one history that has led you to this current state. Maybe here's one history that has led you to state X, there's another one. Yeah. But all that you actually know and remember is your current state X. So you don't know if that's the one that you've seen or that's the one that you've seen. And if you now compute the conditional probability of the future given the whole past, then it will be different in both cases in general. But what you still want to do if you're the observer, you may still want to bet on the future. You still want to predict the future. Now, if you have predictivity here, then you can still do this. You can just use this notion of conditional probability to bet on the future, to predict what you see next. So when is this happening? Well, Markovian measures, for example, are obviously predictive. So in a Markovian case, whatever happens next just depends on your current state here, on the last one. And these others don't matter anyway. Whatever happened before doesn't matter. You get the same probabilities for the future. So you can just define this to be the conditional probability of the future given the present. Yeah. Sure, if the past doesn't matter, then you don't need it. And then this has that property. Yeah. Now, you can say a bit more. You can look at the histories where you've forgotten your state many times. So this is the set of histories which end with X, that's your current state, but where the state has already been repeated a couple of times. Yeah. So this hash here gives you how many times this X appears in the history in the past. And then you can show that a measure is predictive if and only if this ratio here, this conditional probability, doesn't depend on the number of times you have forgotten. So this hash here is the number of times you've been woken up if you're beauty. And if the conditional probability doesn't depend on this number of wakings, then this measure is predictive, if and only if. For all numbers of wakings or loops for which this is not zero here in the denominator. So then you can see that acyclic measures must be predictive. So you never forget. Yeah, you don't get amnesia, you never get back to your old state. Well, then this variable here can only have the value 1. You cannot have twice the same state. And so it's clear that only in the case of one repetition, or two or three of them, is the set of histories not empty. And then you can compute this expression for one repetition, and then you get the probability that you're looking at. So this goes back to this picture where predictive measures contain the Markovian and the acyclic measures. And now to alleviate to get rid of the confusion, let's look at the Sleeping Beauty. So for Sleeping Beauty, what we're interested in, and I should actually go back to the picture here. Here, it's the particular state that's particularly interesting is the state that's labeled by 1, yeah, because she's more than once in that state. So let's look at the state x equal to 1. Now, how often can she be in this state? Well, either once or twice. So what I called hash here, this random variable of loops, is either 1 or 2. These are the possibilities. And now the set of histories where you have one repetition, well, and that end with x, well, there's just one possible history, namely the one where she's in the initial state 0, and then in the state 1, and that's it. So that would be history like this. And being twice in the state x, well, there's also just one possibility, the one below here. So that would be a history where she starts off in state 0, is then in state 1, and then again in state 1. Okay? Good. Now what we need to check is about whether this conditional, we compute this expression for the different number of loopings, 1 or 2, and see if it's the same. So basically, the conditional probability of having 0, 0 next, given that x is equal to 1 and that you have one repetition. So you sum over all the histories with one repetition, which is just this element. So you need the probability, so x and then y, so you need this, whoops. So you basically just take the history, 0, 1, and then the next state, 0, 0, divided by this one here. And if you look at the numbers on the blackboard, then you find that this is 1/2. Yeah. What if you have two repetitions and you compute the same thing? Well, maybe I don't have to do that, but it's kind of obvious in the picture here. If you've been woken up twice here, then the probability to end up there is just 0. That's impossible. So this would be 0. And so you see that the numbers don't agree. And this means that the beauty measure is not predictive. It's not predictive. So in a certain measure theoretic way, this tells you that there just is no conditional probability of the next being next in the state 0, 0 given the state 1. So, here we've been. Good. Now, what does this tell you? Well, let's go back to the original problem. Yeah. We ask Beauty, please tell me what's your credence or your probability of heads. Now, I claim, first of all, that whatever the answer is, the answer should just be whatever Beauty believes to be in the state 0, 0 next. Yeah, so for Beauty, it has been heads all along, if and only if, at the next moment, she'll be told by the scientists that it was heads. Yeah? Not in any other cases. So basically, the answer to the problem that Beauty should give us is this conditional probability that 0, 0 comes next, given that she's in the state 1 at the moment. Yeah? That's the answer to the problem. But I've just shown you formally that this probability is formally undefined. It's undefined because this measure is not predictive. So probability theory alone just doesn't answer this question because this conditional probability just doesn't have any value. So what do we have to do there? Well, basically what you have to do, if you're Beauty and you want to write down a probability like that, is you have to have some degree of belief on how often you've been woken up. You need an extra degree of belief on whether it's your first or your second waking. And that has to be come from the outside, because that's not part of this random process. It's not a random variable, actually, on this process. If you look at formally, the probability space here is just a set of infinite histories. And then the number of wakings is just it would be 1 here, it would be 2 over there. So it's not something you can assign to a history. It's more if you're somewhere in the history, it's something that will assign subjectively. So this means, but now I can say, well, if my degree of belief that I've woken up for the first time is just 2/3, because on the long run, if I repeat it many times, I just get up 2 of 3 times, then you get the third position back. Yeah. But in the end, this is just an arbitrary assignment of your belief in whether you've, like, how many times you've already woken up. And in this case, you might say it's kind of natural to believe in probability 2/3 for being woken up once, but in more complicated situations, it's very unclear what your degree of belief should be on your number of wakenings. And so if your measure has this property of not being predictive, then you just in general don't know what to do. You don't know what to assign as a probability to the future. Yeah, and the claim is obviously this is at the core of the confusion here. It's a this property of not being predictive, which just tells you there is no best answer, and it depends on your degree of belief and or how you operationalize this experiment in the long run. Whether you say I repeat it many times and then I count, or whatever you do. Okay. Good. Anything on that? Maybe discussions, questions? Yeah.
I think you could analyze, make a similar analysis using like ordinary probability measures, right? The only thing that you use here are properties that they obey more or less the standard rules of probability.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that they were like algorithmic in some sense. Like
no.
Algorithmic in the sense that they relate to the history.
Yes.
Of observation, but not more than that.
Absolutely. There's no algorithmic information theory there. Yeah. And that's all without algorithmic information.
Predictive can be given for any, I'd say.
Yeah. I'm actually not talking much more about algorithmic information now. Just more about the general formalism of talking about observers and what can happen if observers are part of a process. And we take that seriously, that we put the observer inside the process. Then you have, first of all, you see that you have these strange phenomena and there's a formalism to deal with it. And now the next part will be the claim that in some cases, this can give you very, very strange phenomena of the way that resemble some quantum-like predictions. So and this is the motivation to look at it comes from this morning where I've shown you this theory where I said, you know, you have an observer, it goes through a bunch of states, and it's whatever happens is determined by algorithmic probability. I've also told you an open problem, namely I want a kind of Markovian formulation of that where everything just depends on your final state, but totally I don't really know what to do there. Yeah. That's what one thing I told you, this postulate in the open problem. And second, I told you that this thing predicts something, namely it's something like an external world that emerges. So that would be like a process where the observer is part of a computational process where the observer and its states are just distributed according to the marginal distribution of this process. Now, the idea is that we just put these two together. If you combine these two, then we would be led to a situation like the following. We'd say we have an observer, and its states are distributed according to some version of algorithmic probability, which is now Markovian. And if that looks as if it came from some external world with some other distribution, well, then this distribution will also be Markovian as the original distribution was. So what happens is that we had a process, the observer is part of it, and it's distributed in a Markovian way, and Markovian means that it's predictive. So we're now led to the following setting, and that's what I study now. We have an observer, which is actually part of a computable probabilistic process. So now we're really looking at an observer in some Fourier theory, this is classical in this case, which is maybe actually part of the topic of this conference. But this is what we're doing. And this process can lead to cycles like amnesia, like for the observers, like in the Sleeping Beauty problem, this is allowed. But there's a constraint in the marginal distribution of the state of this observer is constrained to be predictive, which means that there is some kind of induced notion of probability of future states given the present state. And this comes exactly from this point where I said, let's assume I can solve the open problem, put a Markovian distribution here, then this must also be Markovian, and if it's Markovian, it must be predictive. Okay, anyway. So, we have that. And now let's ask, what does it mean? What would such a world look like for an observer? What kind of statistics would he see? So first of all, let's look at predictivity a bit differently. Predictivity tells you that your future states, given the present, are conditionally independent from the number of loopings or wakens that you had. Yeah. That's predictivity. That's not the case here. So the probability of the future in the Sleeping Beauty problem, given the present, also depends on the number of loopings. Yeah, it gets different value here. But if it's the same in both cases, you have this conditional independence relation here. Good. As I said, again, Sleeping Beauty problem doesn't satisfy this conditional independence relation and is not predictive in this sense. So in words, what that means is that nothing that the observer learns in the future, why, teaches her anything about how often she looped back into an earlier state. Yeah, that's one way to interpret that. Another way to say, even if she learned how often she has looped back to an earlier state, that wouldn't teach her anything about her future experiences. That's what this thing says. Yeah, and in a way, for those who know Rob's work, you can actually make a point that this is, in some sense, you can say, well, this is a weak notion of contextuality, where you have an operational distribution that's prepared for the observer, and there's a context, which is the number of loopings, and In both cases, you get the same operational distribution but with a different ontology that underlies this distribution. But it doesn't really matter so much. So let's instead go on and ask the following question. That's a question I want to study now. What kind of statistics do observers see if they are in such a world? In particular, what kinds of correlations in Bell experiments do they see? And of course, when I talk about a Bell experiment, I need to say what it means to be far away from each other and need some kind of space-like separation. So a necessary assumption to talk about that is to say that there is some notion of locality in this process here. For example, in a cellular automaton like that, we have that. Yeah, we have some cells that are close by and cells that are far away, and then information needs some time to travel along here. Also on the tape of a Turing machine, we would have such a property. So let's assume that we have such a process where there's a notion of locality. And then we can set up a Bell experiment. Now, what correlations do we expect? Well, here's the apparent answer, obviously. Since this is a classical process here, the correlations that the observer sees, they must obviously be classical correlations. Sure. But that's not quite right. There's a catch to it that we will see now. And the thing is that the cycles, like here, forgetting, this can actually be correlated with a distant random variable. And then something really funny happens. So imagine Sleeping Beauty, and the coin is tossed, which decides whether Beauty awakes one or twice. But this coin is correlated with another distant coin. So what do you have then? Here's a very colorful picture of Abby in a Bell experiment in her computational world. Write this down a bit. So what we do is we can say, well, Abby is somehow part of the computation, and then far away we set up another process where we have a fresh random variable B, and here we have a fresh local random variable A. Fresh means they're uncorrelated with whatever comes next or whatever could influence the process here. And we have some distributed randomness, some lambdas that have been distributed to the two parties beforehand. Now, as always, we think something happens locally and we get an outcome, and also at B, something happens locally and produces an outcome. And so then we have the local random variables A, B. And now we say we have a classical, obviously this is all classical, so we have a classical correlation that we call P0, which determines what happens in that process here. And we have outcomes V and W given settings A and B. And if it's classical, it's really just of the usual form where you have a local distribution which factorizes given lambda, yeah? Like this. And the outcome here, W at B, this can take, say, two values, plus or minus one. Spin up or spin down if you want. And now the outcome at Alice's site has an extra outcome empty. So V is either minus one or plus one or empty outcome. And the catch is that if you get the empty outcome locally, then Abby locally loops back into her old state. So she's in some state here. She performs the experiment. If she locally finds the empty outcome, then local physics just forces her back into her old state. Whereas if she doesn't, if she finds another outcome, then she actually learns the outcome. Yeah, that's the idea. So if V is the empty outcome, then A loops back into an earlier state. It's like the coin toss in Sleeping Beauty, but now correlated with the distant variable. Now the funny thing is, if she really loops back and she thinks in the beginning, oh, it's interesting, it's now 9 a.m., I'm starting my Bell experiment, I'm so curious what I find, and then she, you know, inputs A into her box, and then local physics forces her back into her old state, that means that the old state is the same as before. So she's forgotten what happens. The answer is, oh, it's 9 a.m., I'm starting my Bell experiment, I'm inputting A into my box, and this will happen, obviously, until the outcome locally is just not the empty outcome. So what this means, that in the long run, you have a post-selection. Yeah? You have what she sees locally is just post-selected on having not this non-detection outcome. So what she effectively sees, it's this post-selected distribution, which is just the original one divided by the probability that she didn't get the empty outcome. So you divide by this probability. And then you get a post-selected distribution. And that's what she sees. Yeah. I mean, not immediately. Immediately, she sees just her local outcome. But later on, the other outcome will travel to the other side. And she will see the other outcome, and then she will get a distribution that resembles this post-selection here. Now, what properties does that thing have? Here's one thing we can say first. Turns out that if this lambda here, this random variable, will be learned by Abby later on somehow, then this distribution must still be local. So you can throw a lemma. So if A learns the variable lambda 1, say the first outcome, for example, in the future, actually with non-zero probability is enough, then P admits a local hidden variable model. Local hidden variable model. And so let me give you the proof sketch to see how predictivity comes in here. So suppose A learns lambda 1 later. If she learns lambda 1 later, then by definition, this shall not tell her anything about whether she has looped or not. Yeah? So this cannot tell her any information about whether this was an empty outcome or not. So this means that lambda 1 as a random variable must be independent of the non-detection event random variable. And so this means that for the original distribution that governs this process, P0 of the empty outcome given lambda and A must be the same as P0 given of the empty outcome only given A. So learning lambda teaches you nothing about whether you had an empty outcome or not. And I can look at a couple of papers, and it's kind of easy to see that this enforces that P is local. So this proves that the post-selected distribution here is actually a local distribution. End of the proof. There's a PRA by a couple of people that show this in a bit more generality. So it's like if you have a detection loophole in a Bell experiment and your non-detection event is uncorrelated with your hidden variable, then your post-selected distribution is a classical distribution. Good. Yeah. Now, we know in this process there are anyway many things that Abby does not know, never in the future at all. So it could also be lambda, and she could be the case that she actually never learns lambda. So what happens then? If she learns lambda, it's classical. What if she doesn't? So, well, since you have this, so turns out that if this lambda is never revealed, then it's easily possible to have a proxies like that, which effectively gives non-classical distributions for Abby from this. For example, here's a classical distribution P0 of the events given the settings. And this is just a classical distribution. It's a convex combination of product distributions. But now if you post-select on the detection outcome, then you get something that's actually a PR box correlation, which violates a Bell inequality actually maximally. So indeed, yeah, if lambda is never revealed here, which means that it's somehow you have contextually and drops back in sense where you have some element of ontic reality that you never see, then in this case, this allows you to get distributions that violate a Bell inequality. Now, this is already interesting. It's not yet interesting here. It's not yet because in general, you know that post-selection can also generate signaling distributions. And so does this mean that in such a situation, we would also get signaling distributions? And it turns out that the answer is no. And that's the last thing I'm going to tell you now, but maybe without the proof. So you can show the following, and I won't give you the proof, although it's not difficult. Turns out that P, the post-selected distribution, is definitely non-signaling from B to A. But if Abby learns, so what happens is, you ask, will Abby ever learn the outcome W in the future? And if she learns that outcome with non-zero probability in the future, then this forces the distribution to be non-signaling. So if Abby learns with non-zero probability, say the first outcome W1 and also the setting B on the other side in the future, then P is also non-signaling from A to B. And we expect that she will learn, she may learn this here in the future, because the whole point is that at some point in the future, she will collect the local outcome that happened at B and learn this value and compute the correlations from them as the outcome of this Bell experiment. So, so in this case, we get a situation where you have a Bell violation and also no signaling. It's a kind of consequence of that thing. Now, what does it all mean? Let me give a few conceptual comments on this. So first of all, we can ask, well, that's all fine here somehow, but I mean, come on. Yeah, Abby, she's just forgotten that she just looped back. She can go on the street and ask her neighbor. Yeah, like, hey, Bob, I don't know. What does your clock show? What time is it now? Maybe I've looped back, tell me. Or maybe you've seen me do the same thing twice. So question, can't Abby just ask someone else, look at her wristwatch maybe to find out whether she has looped back? Answer is yes, she can. But getting any kind of meaningful answer would violate the predictivity assumption. Yeah, so if her neighbor could tell her, oh yeah, actually you did it twice, then when she sees this neighbor telling her that would be an element of her future experiences that are correlated with how often she is looped. And this violates predictivity. So this cannot happen, which means there's just no way for her to find out just by the constraint of predictivity which was there from the start. Yeah. So then you can ask, well, but then this computation must presumably be very special to hide all this information from Abby. Do you really think that the world pulls off these fancy tricks to look quantum? My answer is no, not at all. That's not the claim here. The claim is that this is basically an artifact of the computational model that we have started out with. We started with Turing machines, and then we found this behavior. What we actually have is an abstract computational process, and we've just represented it in a non-natural way. And here's an analogy, and just a second. For example, there's Conway's Game of Life, which is a perfectly well-defined computational process. You have a 2D grid, and then you have cells that can be black or white, changing according to certain rules. Of course, you can perfectly simulate that on a one-dimensional Turing machine. Yeah, you can do that. But of course, this one-dimensional Turing machine has to pull off quite some fancy tricks to simulate this 2D game of life. So it's not a really natural computational model to describe this process. A more natural model of computation to simulate that process would be a 2D universal cellular automaton, for example. Yeah. And what we've done here is just we've said, oh, we'll start with Turing machines or with some model, and then we've seen that something quite fancy must happen here to lead to the behavior that I've shown you. But there was a question.
So you're saying that Alice effectively forgets that she performed the measurements.
Yes.
Does that imply that Bob's forgetting that he performs the measurements too? Because you're saying that you post-select in registers where you both get outcomes. So Bob's outcome kind of never happened as well, right?
Yeah, in a way, that's a good question. So, I mean, the way I've depicted it here is really there's Abby, and then there's this other part where there's no observer a priori. So this is A in her A world.
Yeah.
She's doing everything alone.
But yeah. Bob's world, if Bob was on that side.
Yes, and Bob, but Bob then...
Then not ever experienced that outcome.
Yes, that's a good question, how we think if we have the Bob here as well. And if you think of what I talked about this morning, then the question of about more than one observer is anyway an interesting one. But I will get also back to that in like two slides again.
Okay.
But for now, it's really just for Abby, that's what's happening for her. Good. So I would not say that the world pulls off any tricks to look quantum. So then you can ask questions, but then what is a natural model of computation for this kind of processes, these predictive processes that you've shown us? Predictive, I mean, that generate these predictive measures and hide this information from the observers. And then the answer is, an excellent question. and I guess it's not, I'm not really sure, but if you think of it for a while, then I guess what you will end up with is something that's close to something Gilles Brassard has worked out and Raymond Robichaud, which is there what they call a local realist non-hidden variable model of quantum mechanics, where you have a kind of massive parallelism and you have several versions of any observer being computed locally and only some of them will ever meet. So, and if you go back to this thought experiment here and you ask, what if I have a Bob here and the different versions of the outcome that are kind of transported to Abby here, then you have to have a similar behavior to actually lead to the behavior of this post-selected distribution and the no signaling. Yeah, so again, the claim is, good. So the claim is that if you have a process which, and you're an observer, you're part of it, and it's predictive, so it still allows you to predict the future, but you sometimes forget something, then this process is best represented by a computational model that looks a bit like this, and that has certain features that we probably, maybe, or I don't know, maybe are remotely similar to quantum computation, and kind of parallelism, and superposition or something, and only some branches see each other. But this is all very speculative, of course. No. Good. Final slide, final comment. But then what is really going on in the quantum world? Now here's my personal take on this. If you take the approach of this morning seriously, then whatever we call the world is anyway just an abstract emergent computational process that's an extremely convenient fiction to predict future experiences. So then if you ask the question, what's really going on in that world? It's as meaningless as asking, are electrons sweet or sour, or what's the email address of the moon's gravitational field? Then there would just be no answer, because there is nothing, I mean, not in a naive sense, the way of really thinking of going on. It's an abstract process, it's a computation, and it's our choice what model of computation we use to represent the process. Just that some representations are more natural than others in the sense that their internal causal structure reflects very strongly the causal structure of the abstract process. Good. So that's basically it. Here are the conclusions. So I've introduced a formalism that describes an observer's states and the distribution over time. And something like this, for example, and I used it to analyze the Sleeping Beauty problem a little bit for you. And hopefully I could convince you that the solution to the Sleeping Beauty problem is undefined. Yeah? It's a matter of taste, of extra assumptions. And then we've looked at a case where observers are actually part of a stochastic process, and I've tried to convince you that Bell violation and no signaling can, under some assumptions, yeah, very strong assumptions obviously, be understood as consequences of constraints on the observer and how it changes over time. So it's written up as section 13 in this paper here. maybe, not sure if this is a fair characterization, but maybe you can say a strange world like that would lead observers to predict the future using non-classical distributions. So maybe this is a bit in a sense of cubism, that you have a very weird ontology and you try to find your way in that world somehow. And then it's somehow non-classical distributions that help you most in this case. Maybe going off to tangents. Okay, thanks for listening. Yeah.
So presumably this sort of model of a Bell experiment is a small part of a much larger project that could be derived any arbitrary phenomena or a physical theory from these kinds of ideas. Is the reason you focus on this one kind of a shock value, or you had some idea about it, or like why single out Bell's theorem as opposed to
So I guess I learned from Rob that one thing you should really be able to explain or to predict is a violation of Bell inequalities, but also no signaling. You want both at the same time, because that you can usually only get with fine-tuning. And so that's why I wanted to get these two phenomena. But I think it comes from just thinking of cubism. I thought a lot about cubism. I was trying to think about what kind of world would make you use quantum states as degree, like as your states of belief. But also it's related, obviously, to what I talked this morning. Yeah. I've given you some kind of classical approach where the world is emergent and so on. And then obviously it's meaningless if it's not at least compatible with quantum theory in principle. But this is more, it's more try to understand these properties in some epistemic way, as some properties of observers, or as something that comes naturally from other properties of observers that are more about their knowledge and what they know about themselves or the world around them. So. And then some of it you can relate maybe a bit more even to Bayesianism and to also philosophy of probability and so on. So I guess predictivity here, the way it's defined informally, which I've just skipped, whatever it is, question. I'm going back and forth because it must be somewhere. Yeah, probably here. Predictivity. So this tells you that given what you know now, there is a kind of best guess. There is a probability that you should assign to your future observations, given some objective chance of the process that you're part of. So this resembles, I think, what philosophers, some aspects of what philosophers call the principle, which tells you that if there's an objective chance of something, then this objective chance should determine how you bet on the future subjectively. And this is maybe an instance of that somehow. Yeah. And so in a way, maybe the principle is related to Bell violations and no signaling, or something like this. Who knows? It's kind of, so maybe you see this web of ideas, and I don't really know where this is going, but that's a story you can at least tell here. I was hoping we might use some of it for the thing with Matthias, but I'm not sure about this.
you all need some time to digest, then you can do it with tea downstairs. And then you continue the discussion.
Thanks a lot.